From Islamic Finance News, the world's leading Islamic finance news provider, this is IFN Podcast.
Hello and welcome to another episode of IFN Podcast. My name is Vinita Tan and I'm your host today. Australia may not always be the first that comes to mind when we talk about Islamic banking and finance. With relatively limited activities in the past few years, things are however picking up with new entrants and products to the market. We speak to Dean Gillespie, the CEO of Islamic banking startup Islamic Bank of Australia, to canvas the landscape and ask when can we expect to see Australia's first fully fledged Islamic bank.
So Dean, I've been following the development of an Islamic bank in Australia for years now. So it's a long time in the making. But as far as Islamic Bank of Australia is concerned, where does this story actually begin?
Yeah, look, it's a really good question. And it's been a really exciting journey for us in Australia. It's not a country that people sort of naturally think of as being a place that you would see an Islamic bank. But it started back in around 2012 when there was a group of really passionate Muslim Australians that were interested in creating Australia's first Sharia compliant bank. So there's something like 3% of the population in Australia that's Muslim. But there's no Islamic bank. So if you go to other markets like the UK, there's 6 or 7 different Islamic banks already, but that doesn't exist in Australia at the moment. And so for Muslim Australians, they don't really have a bank that, allows them to bank in line with their faith.
In terms of IBA, where are we now? In terms of, are we going to see a bank soon? Has there been any changes in terms of model?
Yeah, so I mean, obviously, it's been a bit of a process we've had to work through over the last 7 or 8 years, and a lot of that was really sort of educating people in Australia as to what Islamic banking is, and we still have to do a lot of that every day in terms of the differences between conventional banking and Islamic banking and the sorts of products that you get in an Islamic financing transaction, but. Where we're at the moment is we're currently waiting for the regulator, so that's the Australian Prudential Regulation Authority, or APRA, to issue us with our first banking licence. We're really comfortable with that. We've got a great relationship with APRA. They're very, very helpful as we've sort of gone through this process. One of the things that's held us up a little bit this year has been COVID-19. I think, Vanita, that was obviously something that, no one was anticipating, and so APRA indicated to the Australian community that they wouldn't be issuing any banking licences until, that's passed to some extent. So we've just been working with them through that process. But we're really hopeful that we'll be able to launch sort of in 2021 and bring, Sharia-compliant banking to Australia.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but I also understand that now, rather than a traditional brick and mortar concept, you guys are leading towards a digital approach. Is that right?
Yes. Yeah, that's right. So, I mean, I think anyone that's creating a bank, whether it's Islamic or a conventional bank at the moment, you wouldn't roll out thousands of branches. It's something that we're, in other markets, again, like the UK or the US or even in Australia, you're seeing the big banks closing branches because people just don't tend to go into bank branches anymore. So, when you're starting from scratch and you're able to build a bank with sort of no legacy systems, we want it to be really digital. The other thing is, I mean, we're getting customers signing up to IBA onto our waiting list all the time. And they're, it's quite a young demographic. It's not, a whole heap of obviously 50, 60, 70, 80 year olds. We obviously have a lot of, older people signing up as well. But we're getting a lot of people that are sort of 18, 20, 25, 30, 35 years old. And so it's really important that, we have a great digital experience so people can go and do their mobile banking, through our app or go to our website and do desktop banking through that. And, we're pretty hopeful that because we're sort of starting from scratch, we've got some absolutely fantastic designers working on what our app looks like and those sorts of things. So we think we're going to be really, really hopefully stand out in the market.
Okay, so license aside, like in terms of developing the banking app or banking platform, you said that we're expecting a license, say, 2021. So even when you get the license, are we ready to launch?
Yeah, so look, there'll be, obviously, once we have the license, there's just a few other things we have to close out. So we have to make sure that, we've fully tested all the systems and things. So it would be our hope to launch pretty quickly after we get the license, certainly to a test group of customers. So the process that you go through in Australia to get a banking license is the the banking regulator gives you a restricted license first, and effectively that's for you to test your systems and accounts with a small number of people. So, you know, we'd be offering that up to our staff, but also some friends and some of the early people in our waiting list that have, you know, really been with us from the beginning. And then once that's all working well, then obviously once we can sort of show APRA that that's all fine, then you then granted a full license, and then you can go to the market and launch to as many people as you want. So we'd certainly be hopeful that in 2021 we got through both those stages. But as I say, we've got one thing I'm very conscious of is we've got a lot of interest in the community and a lot of people signing up to our waiting list. And so I don't want to hold them back. I want to try and offer the Sharia compliant banking to them as fast as we can.
Do you guys have an idea of what kind of products you would first roll out?
Yeah, so when we first launch, we'll launch as a retail bank, at least for the first year or so, which means that, you know, it would be banking for individuals. So obviously everything will be 100% Sharia compliant. So we'll offer an everyday transaction account for people to do their day-to-day banking, you know, with a debit MasterCard or a debit Visa card so they can use it around the world. We'll offer savings products like term deposits using, there's different principles and way you can do it, like Wakala or, you know, in terms of agency where we take those investment deposits and then obviously use them to generate a return and we share some of that profit back to customers. And we'll also launch with sort of home finance. So people in Australia that are banking with someone else today will be able to refinance their homes or buy a home with IBA, and it will be a Sharia compliant transaction.
You said there's a lot of interest and your waiting list is growing. Yes. How long is the waiting list? And also the bank or the concept of Islamic banking, how is it actually being received in Australia?
Yeah, look, it's been interesting. It's been a bit of a journey for us. So as I said, you know, it's, you almost need to educate people a little bit. Obviously, people that have perhaps moved to Australia from another, you know, country, strongly Muslim country, you know, have a good understanding already of Sharia compliant banking. But for even many Muslim Australians, and about 40% of Muslim Australians have actually grown, you know, been born in Australia, so they've grown up in Australia. Still have to explain a little bit. And so we're, you know, doing a lot of effort on our website and through some of the communications we're issuing out, even through Facebook and through other channels around, you know, what Sharia compliant banking actually means. But in terms of, I mean, the waiting list, so we actually hadn't gone out and marketed IBA at all until about 2 weeks ago. And we've already got about 1,500 customers over the last few weeks. So, and we've just seen some really strong media, even today, where, you know, the ABC, which is the national broadcaster in Australia, has just run a story on us nationwide on the front page of their website, their news website. And so we're getting, you know, I'm watching my email as I talk to you right now, and I can see people signing up every couple of minutes to the program. So, you know, we're really excited about it. But the plan was always the second half of this year, so sort of from July, August, you know, now onwards, to really, that was when we were going to launch to the market. So we're starting to do that now. But we would be hoping to have tens of thousands of customers over coming months.
So I know that you guys only really started marketing a couple of weeks now. But do you have data, or can you give us an idea on where the interest is coming from? Like, talk about the Muslim demographics in Australia. Help us understand the kind of opportunities available.
Yeah, I looked. So Muslim Australians, as I say, about 40% grew up and were born in Australia. The other 60% came from overseas as migrants, and they come from very different groups, much like the Muslim community anywhere in the world. They come from very different, you know, ethnic groups. We've got Bangladeshi Muslims, we've got people from Malaysia, we've got people from Indonesia, we've got people from the Middle East who are living in Australia and, you know, of the Islam faith. So, you know, quite a diverse group. As I said before, you know, certainly from an age perspective, you know, a whole range of people sort of coming to us. But what we're seeing, you know, more and more is the fact that there's about 3% of the population that is Muslim. That's growing really strongly in Australia. So every 5 years in Australia, we do a census of the entire population. And if you went back 20 years, it would have only been less than 1% of the population that was Muslim. I think 10 years ago, it was about 2.1%. Last time, it was about 2.4%. We're expecting it to be closer to 3 and sort of pushing towards a million people in Australia when they do the census next year. So it's not only a growing as a proportion of the Australian population, but as the Aussie population gets bigger anyway in absolute terms, the number of Muslims is growing really fast. So we think that the fact that there hasn't been an Islamic bank in Australia to date, you know, is something that we need to fix. Australia prides itself on being a very you know, one of the most multicultural countries in the world, and indeed the constitution mentions that, you know, the government can't discriminate on the basis of religion, and yet there's no bank in Australia that is available to people that don't want to deal with interest and some of the other prohibitions that exist under sort of Sharia compliant banking. So we'll be doing all of those things that, you know, you would expect from a Sharia compliant bank. So it's obviously not just the structure of the banking products, but it's also, you know, we won't be dealing with haram industries like, you know, pork or alcohol or tobacco or, you know, arms dealers and those sorts of things as well. So there's a lot of appeal there, not only for the Muslim population, but also from the more general population as well.
As you mentioned, there are really no Islamic finance service providers at the moment, or very few. So how are the Sharia conscious Muslims being serviced now in the country?
Yeah, so there's a couple of small cooperatives that have been offering Sharia compliant home finance for some time. And, you know, we certainly wish them all the best. You know, they're good organizations that have been serving the community, but there hasn't been a bank. So whilst you could probably do a home finance transaction with a Sharia compliant entity in Australia, you haven't been able to do your day-to-day banking. And obviously if you so what we think has been going on, and certainly this is what other Muslim Australians have told us from conversations that we've had with them, is they're just banking with someone else. So and they're banking in a way that is not consistent with you know, a Sharia compliant way of doing things. So you know, obviously, you know, if you're growing up in Australia or in any country around the world, you're probably going to need a bank. And so people are banking through the big banks in Australia, some of the second tier banks, but obviously that's not in a Sharia compliant way. So what we're going to offer is a 100% pure Sharia compliant ecosystem, if I can call it that, Vanita, in terms of, you know, the whole bank. So in other words, we'll be taking money, you know, taking deposits from customers on one side of the balance sheet in a Sharia compliant way, and then using those funds to offer finance for not only home finance, but we'll offer personal finance and, you know, business loans and business accounts as well, in a Sharia compliant way. And by doing that, we ensure that the entire ecosystem is Sharia compliant, because what you find at the moment, of course, is if you go to an ordinary bank, some of the banks in Australia actually do offer some Sharia compliant products, but the money that they're using for that will have been raised from non-Sharia compliant sources. Right. So the money will have co-mingled with all this other money that was not Sharia compliant. It could be a deposit that came from a tobacco company that was put in on one side of the bank, and then it's lent out on a Sharia compliant basis on the other side of the bank, which obviously is not very good. So, you know, whereas what we'll be doing is we'll be avoiding interest as much as we can. And look, just from a running a bank perspective in Australia, there's some cases where we might have to earn a little bit of interest because we're required to hold certain amounts of regulatory capital with the central bank in Australia. And so we might earn some interest, but what we've said is we will put that interest, and in fact, what we do already is we put that interest into a bank account, and we keep it separate from everything else, and we donate that out to the community. So we've already, you know, planted 1,000 trees in Australia to obviously fight climate change. We're doing some other things in local community groups where, you know, we're fighting homelessness. We'll be supporting education in communities and those sorts of things. And so we're really excited about that community grants program that we've got. And obviously, if anyone wants to come to our website and they've got a really good idea about how we could use some of those funds that we earn, then, you know, obviously delighted to hear about that as well. I think the other thing that I might just touch on is the ethical side of this. So there's experience from other markets, and indeed one of the gentlemen on our board is a guy called Sultan Chowdhury, who you may know. Sultan got an order of the British Empire in the UK for all of his work in Islamic banking in the UK, but he was the CEO of Al Rayan Bank, which is the UK's largest Islamic bank. And certainly Sultan's feedback has been that you'll obviously get a lot of Muslim Australians coming to us as a bank, but there'll be a lot of people that actually are just non-Muslim but are in the Australian community that are really interested in the ethical side of Islamic banking. And I think that's something really special that Islamic banking can bring to Australia, is that you've got these wonderful set of ideals and ethical way of dealing with things where, you know, as I said before, you don't necessarily bank certain industries, but there's such an opportunity for change that you can drive by using some of these funds and creating a real community and investing in things like planting trees or helping people that are in need, that's really aligned with the Muslim faith, but so many people in Australia, I think, are crying out for as well.
Dean, we've talked about this a little bit when you talk about educating the market about Sharia compliant banking.
Yes.
We've also talked about how diverse the Muslim community is in Australia.
Yes.
Considering the diversity and the level of awareness, I'm so interested in knowing, like, what other challenges do you face in bringing or making IBA a reality? Because, you know, as we've talked about, this has been years in the making, right? So what were some of the biggest obstacles that you faced?
Yeah, look, it's a really good question. It's certainly starting a bank is not the easiest thing to do in the world. There's a lot of hurdles that you have to go through, and a lot of hard work has gone into it from the team over a number of years, as you've said. But look, we want to make sure that we're a really good bank that's well regulated, that is doing the right thing by the regulator. And so there's a lot of work that we've done in terms of making sure that our application is exactly in line with what the regulator expects. But also, it's not just educating the community, but it's also, addressing some of the other challenges that have popped up along the way. So one of the earliest ones that was most, almost in hindsight, a bit funny was that the way that banks, the Banking Act in Australia in 1959 is worded, or maybe it's one of the regulations, sort of almost touches on interest and implies that you need to have interest in your bank to be a bank within Australia. And of course, we're not dealing with interest because we're an Islamic bank. And so we had to go through a process with the Australian government of talking to various arms, everyone from the Treasury Department to, the Australian Securities and Investment Commission and APRA, and get them comfortable that we were actually going to be a bank and we should be regulated as such. And that put a little delay in our application, but, everyone at APRA and ASIC was incredibly helpful and they helped us through that process. But so there's little hurdles that come up along the way, but, we're really confident with the path that we're on now and we're sort of finalising systems and things at the moment. So, yeah, hopefully we can bring the service to the market next year.
And is IBA completely funded by Australian entities, or do you have foreign investors as well?
Yeah, so one of the things that we found, obviously, one of the other challenges is you have to raise capital, obviously, to run a bank. And so we've been talking to investors all over the world, really. We've been to, predominantly Islamic countries. So, places like Malaysia, places like, Saudi Arabia, been to the United Arab Emirates, and we've spoken to many people in these locations about that. And so, we're really pleased. We've got a fantastic investor called Mohammed Charji, who's the CEO of one of the big freight companies out of the UAE, who's come on board in support. We're talking to some other investors at the moment that are from the Middle East in terms of joining us. And the one thing that comes from them overwhelmingly when you discuss the opportunity in Australia is just how exciting it is that we're actually creating Australia's first Sharia-compliant bank. It's very rare where you... It's almost like if you pulled out one of those McKinsey or Boston Consulting Group matrices and you tried to tick off the type of business that you want to own. We tick almost every box because we've got a market that's growing strongly. We've got, growing population of Muslim Australians. We've got no competitors as it stands at the moment, really, from a banking perspective. It's quite hard to get a banking license. So once we've got it, there's high barriers to entry. So from an investor perspective, it's actually really interesting to look at Australia. And of course, but overwhelmingly, the people that we've been speaking to have been regarding it not so much as a business opportunity, as just something that I think they could almost be proud of being involved with, the fact that we're actually establishing the first Sharia bank, Sharia compliant bank in Australia. And so a lot of the, Charji, who's the investor from Abreco Enterprises that joined us not long ago, he's doing it because of his heart. He's doing it because he really believes in the cause and thinks that he's going to be bringing something, really important to Australia. And I think the wonderful thing about the team that we've built in Australia is that there's just so much passion around what we're doing. I mean, we know that it's a commercial venture and it is a commercial venture. It's not a cooperative or anything like that. But, we're all doing it, I think, because we're really passionate about the cause and we think this is something that's really missing in Australia at the moment.
So you've mentioned also that once the bank is launched, you will be servicing the consumer financing market segment. Which other market segments are commercially interesting when it comes to Islamic finance in Australia?
Yeah, sure. So, we'll start, as I said, with personal banking, but the logical one for us to then step into within a year or so, and we have this in our plan, so it's not just kind of a random idea, we definitely will be doing it, is we'll be going into sort of small and medium enterprise
business accounts and business lending. So, Australia has millions of small businesses, and a lot of Muslim Australians own, small businesses. So everything from sort of bake shops to bakeries to news agencies to actual, big corporate companies in Australia. So there's a really good opportunity, I think, in that space that we'll go into in terms of making sure that we're offering the ability for them to do their day-to-day banking, but also lending. Not lending because it won't be a loan, but, Sharia-compliant finance for those business facilities. But then at the very top end, I mean, we're getting property developers coming to us saying, we're Muslim, we're property developers, we build big blocks of apartments that are $100 million Australian dollars, sort of $60 million US dollars in Australia, and we want to finance these, and we've always wanted to do this in a Sharia-compliant way, but we haven't had the ability to do that. And, of course, the other big opportunity, I think, is really for foreign investors. So you have a lot of people around the world that would be very interested in investing in Australia because Australia is a very stable, Western democracy, well-regulated environment. But there's not currently a Sharia-compliant vehicle for them to sort of put their money into and bank it in Australia. So by definition, you might have a Sharia-compliant investment fund that's in the Middle East that's interested in investing in Australia, but it's very difficult for them to, move money in a Sharia-compliant manner into Australia and then into an investment and keep the whole thing clean, because they have to go through a normal Australian bank where, as I said before, it gets commingled with all sorts of things and there's no guarantee, where that money has been in the past. So, so we think that there's a really good opportunity there as well for big overseas companies to talk to us as well around and our opportunities there. So, that's why I'm always so busy, Vanita. It's pretty flat out trying to, you've got to prioritise in these things, but, our first desire certainly is, because we're doing it with passion and we've got so many great Muslim people in the community that are supporting what we're doing, we just want to get the products out from a retail banking perspective first, so that we're helping out the local community first, and then we'll talk about, business and big commercial after that.
Do you think that there's any opportunity for Sukuk to develop in Australia?
Yeah, I think so. I absolutely think so. One of the interesting things that we've learned from other markets like the UK is, even from a regulatory perspective, there's Sukuk bonds that banks in the UK are allowed to own to help them sort of meet their regulatory requirements in a Sharia-compliant way. Now, we don't have that in Australia yet, so we would be pushing that. But even more broadly, there are other elements of the Islamic financial services framework that already exist in Australia. So we already have, Islamic Sharia-compliant superannuation funds for people with pensions. Mm. So there are other little snippets in the market around those things. But, these things will evolve over time. And I think as the Muslim community continues to grow, we'll certainly be hopefully supporting there. And look, we'll look at those sorts of things. We want to be able to do financial planning down the track as well. And we'll look at bond issuance and those sorts of things if that makes sense for us over the next few years.
Do you see yourself collaborating with any existing players?
We haven't had conversations with them. We'd certainly be very happy to have a chat to them. One thing that we're finding is that, we're getting a lot of Muslim people coming to us from all over Australia, and indeed a lot of interest from people saying, we'd love to work for you and we'd love to, work in a branch if you open one in Brisbane. Muslims overwhelmingly, when they move to Australia, live in Sydney or they live in Melbourne. And that's not just a Muslim thing. That's an Australian immigration thing. Whenever people move to Australia, they tend to move to the two big cities, which are Melbourne and Sydney. We certainly have, fantastic Muslim communities out in Adelaide and out in Perth. So if people were interested in joining us from those locations, we'd be happy to do that. Some of the businesses that are already operational, one of them is based in Victoria. We'd be happy to have a chat to them. Certainly, as far as I'm concerned, they've done a fantastic job over years of offering these services, but we're looking to take it to the next level.
So there's obviously a lot of grassroots support for Islamic finance in Australia. I'm curious to know, where does the government stand as far as Islamic finance is concerned?
Yeah, I think the Australian government always wants to promote multiculturalism and always wants to promote cohesion between the different groups. And so Islamic banking is obviously something that we're going to be the first to do. But they've, as you would expect any good regulator, they've you know, evaluated our application on the basis of all of the usual things a banking regulator would look at, which is sort of how stable are you going to be? What are your business plans going to be? You know, do you have access to funding that's secure? Do you, you know, what's the appetite of your investors like to put in more capital if that's required as we grow? So they, you know, they don't look at it, I think, particularly from a Islamic versus non-Islamic banking perspective. They just look at it from a, you know, does this meet the needs of an Australian bank, which is 100% right. That's the right approach that they should be taking. But, you know, we've worked with APRA a little bit around the types of products, and we've had to sort of spend some time with them explaining, you know, how they work, and they've been really helpful. And it's not just obviously the banking regulator. We've also had to talk to ASIC, which is in Australia the consumer protection regulator, because you know, there's even some regulations in Australia around the fact you have to quote comparison rates when you do a home loans or a home finance product. You have to be able to quote an interest rate so that people can compare them, which obviously is a bit challenging if you're not charging interest. So we had to make sure that ASIC were happy with our approach and how we were going to do that and calculate it. So I think the Australian government generally has certainly been very supportive of what we're doing. So long as you tick the boxes and you keep them updated, we think we've got a great relationship with them.
However, you know, like some would even argue like Islamic financial institutions would need some leeway to level the playing fields, whether it comes to taxation and yes. elements like that. Do you agree with that? Like, what do you think is
yes.
sort of missing from making Islamic finance a success?
Yes.
What do we need to grow and make the proposition successful? Yes.
Yeah, that's a good question. So the first thing I'd say is, I mean, I think overwhelmingly the pieces of the puzzle are there in terms of what we need to make this a success. So I've got no doubt that IBA will be a success because we've got a good community of people behind it. There are some little things that jump out that could be improved over time in the legislative framework in Australia. So one example is whenever you do a property sale in Australia, there's stamp duty that applies. So the government mm-hmm. charges you a tax, right? Stamp duty. The problem that you have with an Islamic, say, home finance transaction where you sort of have joint ownership and so, say, diminishing masharaka where it gets paid off over time is there would be some initial stamp duty paid at the start when the bank bought the property with the customer, and then when the customer sought to buy more shares off the bank, you would potentially have more stamp duty double charged. And in places like the UK, there's actually legislation that deals with Islamic finance transactions that have been around for 20 years that sort of exempts Islamic finance transactions from that sort of double sort of charging of stamp duty because they understand how the Islamic finance product works. Now, in Australia, we have six states and two territories, and unfortunately, they all have their own stamp duty legislation and they all have their own parliaments. So we would have to go and get them all to change their legislation through all of the individual parliaments to get that exemption in every part of the country. So, you know, that's something that I think will happen over time, but it's not something that we can address straight away. But look, it's not a problem. We've got ways. We've spoken to our lawyers around how we get around that and how do we make sure that customers are protected from those sorts of impacts. But they won't hold us back. I mean, I think that as we grow and people become more and more familiar with the Islamic way of doing things, from a banking perspective, then, you know, that'll change over time.
And one of my final questions to you, Dean, is
sure.
I want to know, like, in the end, like, what's your vision for IBA?
Look, I'd just love us to be a really strong voice in the community that shows that Australia is a multicultural society where we respect everyone and we offer a service to the community that not only Muslim Australians feel proud to have, but also other Australians sort of see the benefit. I think, you know, we have a lot of big banks in Australia that have been there for a long time, and we think that there's a better way of doing things that is really ethical. And so I would be absolutely delighted if in, you know, 2 or 3 or 5 years, we'd grown to be a very significant bank that not only Muslim Australians, but also the general community was proud to bank off because of our ethical focus.
And what can we expect from you guys over the next 6 or 12 months?
Yeah, look, it's going to be a really busy and a really exciting 6 to 12 months, I think. Look, you'll hear more about us. As I said, we literally only started marketing a couple of weeks ago, and we've had our first big news stories go out in the last few days. So you'll just hear more about what we're doing as we grow and we implement the systems. And obviously, as we continue to grow and roll out new products, starting with the personal banking products, but then rapidly followed by business accounts and corporate accounts. And the other thing you'll be hearing a lot more about is how we're really helping the community. So taking some of the funds that we talked about before, some of the profit that we carve off from our business and using it to really drive change that's beneficial to the whole Australian community. Hopefully it's all a success. There's a lot of sweat and tears that has gone into this over, over the last sort of 7 or 8 years. And, I think we're all really proud of where we're getting to. But the work's not done yet, as I keep telling my team. We've got to get there first.
All right. Well, I wish you all the best, Dean. Thank you so much for your time today.